now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
Hello, Andy Shilton, and I am Ezra Peregrine. Coming up this week, we caught up with the wonderful Leo Cole, who plays Ro in Hollyoaks, all today.
And a lot more right Absolutely. Here on Shout Out. Up on musical here this week.
That was lovely harmonising, Sir Twister.
It was, wasn't it?
Beautiful. Yeah, yeah. You should come more often.
Rather good. I should actually. I mean, anyone would think
that you were a radio star.
Interested in radio.
Yeah.
At all. Yeah.
Do you like radio?
No.
Funnily enough. Oh, sorry, I've got it wrong. Well, you've acted that was so well for so many years. Talking
16.
About Radio Caroline. You know,
right.
Boats and radios and that.
Yeah, it's just. You know, stuff I made up.
Oh, wow. It was so believable.
No.
Incredible. How is everybody?
I'm good.
Fine.
Good. Do you know, that reminds me of when we played Liar Liar one Christmas. And do you remember the game? Where you might get asked to tell the truth about yourself or a line the other team have got a guess. And Mitch's one was, I'm distantly related to Dawn French.
Brilliant.
And everyone was like, yep, true.
I believe that. That's an amazing fibbery.
She certainly got away with that one, didn't she? She really made
You can always see the resemblance, can't you?
Yes. In the sense of humour.
So you talk about Vicar of Dibs today.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I love that show.
I love that show.
Yeah, it's good fun.
Sadly, a lot of them passed away since, haven't they?
Stephanie, can't hear you on the mic. Hello.
There's somebody that loves radio as well.
She was staring at me with love.
Daggers.
Daggers drawn.
I haven't received my stipend yet, so I'm awaiting payment.
Stipend?
My stipend.
For?
I'm waiting payment before I can speak.
Oh.
Yes.
You have to get paid, do you?
Of course I do.
That makes you a pro, does it?
Oh, well.
Well, yes.
This is Steffi Barney, radio DJ extraordinaire, we're talking about.
Well, I mean, she's taken over the station for a month by daytime, isn't she? You know. they're closing. For those at home, they're closing the ECC centre during the day in order to facilitate some upgrades. So Steph's just going to broadcast for 7 hours a day for any entire month.
Yeah. I mean, I listen to it that much anyway, so it's no different to me.
Well, it's slightly different. You live with her.
I do.
Does she walk around the house going, "This is Steph"?
She
FM.
Does. She plays jingles all the time to introduce what she's doing. It's really it's like the Truman Show. Hi, I'm here.
When you write that, you'd rather you say, "Steph, what's the time?" She said, "It's 3:05 on this beautiful sunny afternoon."
Wow. Let's talk about the traffic.
Oh, it's all true.
It is. I know. It's a really, really packed show tonight with somebody very special. I know we briefly said it in the introduction, but I just want to say Leo was an absolute delight to interview, a true joy, and it's a wonderful piece. He put a smile so big on my face that my cheeks hurt. So I think the listeners are going to really, really enjoy
We should say thank you as well to his agent, who were very helpful. And also Lime Pictures and
Lime
Channel
Studios.
4.
Yes.
Lime Studios Pictures.
Yeah.
And Channel 4.
Yeah.
For allowing us the interview to go ahead.
Yes. Yeah. And we would love to.
It's
have
a long one too.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want him to go.
Feature, you know. Well, from what
and he wants
me,
to come back on. He does. Yeah. So basically every week is going to be the Leo Cole week. No, I'm just going to imagine that.
Make a change from Steph FM.
It was.
Yeah. Actually, Leo's asked to come back.
That's what he was just saying.
He got so excited, didn't he?
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it's
oh, that's nice.
It's I mean, Hollyoaks has a big place in my heart, as most people know. I've watched it since I was 10 and I haven't missed an episode. So it was a big. Yes, it's been running for 31 years.
Really, as long as
that.
Wow. And Tony's been in it nearly that long, and Diane was in it for 16 years, and they played Leo's parents. So,
I think because you've just said that, and that's creeping, that if Lime Pictures are listening, they should give you a cameo part.
Oh, can you? Oh my gosh, I'd have. I'd be,
Yes, I know.
I couldn't just walk around set all nonchalant.
No, your bowel would evacuate.
Well, I would just be so... When I watch these extras and they look so relaxed, I'm like, how? You know, people just don't get starstruck, I guess, but I do.
Especially if I really admire them.
Yeah. Hello. Yeah, I feel like I'd be that one.
You have that with me at breakfast every morning, don't you?
Starstruck.
To be honest, I feel like maybe you're preparing me.
What for?
Hollyoaks.
That's a true calling.
No, I'm queer. I'm youngish. That'd be great.
Is anyone old enough to remember the first episode of Coronation Street?
No.
You?
Okay. Yes.
I'm Doctor Who with you.
Yes, yeah. I was sat there with Doctor Who. In fact,
yeah, my mum watched episode one of Doctor Who.
There was a big problem with the transmission, so they repeated episode one the following week with episode two.
Mm. I remember EastEnders.
Yes, I watched the first episode of EastEnders.
So I'm sure my age that. Yeah.
Well, all that aside, shall we find out about Hollyoaks?
Yes, please. Yes. Right. Please.
Well, I'm of a certain age, actually, to have remembered the first episode of Coronation Street. And we all know what the soaps have got into up to then, and then EastEnders and Neighbours and Hollyoaks. But one thing that I found about soaps, they did storylines that not many other mainstream shows would tackle. And I think Hollyoaks is well above any of the other soaps in tackling stuff that matters to people. It's quite brave, but they've kept their audience, even though they've been brave. And one of the current storylines is about a young trans man, and we're joined by the person that plays that trans man, Leo. Welcome to Shout Out, Leo.
Hiya, thank you so much for having me. I'm well excited.
We are as well. It's our absolute pleasure. There's so many things I want to ask you, really, but I want you also to take the lead. So I'll start strong with saying, what was life like for you growing up?
I mean, it was weird. It was sort of like growing up, I grew up as a girl, which obviously was wrong looking back on it now. So I struggled a little bit with my mental health. And then when I sort of figured out that I could be trans and being trans was a thing, it was like a light bulb moment and I became myself, which completely flipped the script for me on so many different levels, like in regards to friendships, you know, my mental health, things like that. So yeah, so growing up, it was tough, but I got there in the end.
I'm so glad to hear that. Did you have people that you were able to speak to? What was your friendship group like? And, you know, did you find that you were able to access the support you needed sort of from both family, friends and medical practitioners?
I'm going to say yes and no. So in regards to friends and family, they're incredible. I mean, I sort of fit in quite well with different people at school. There were some people that weren't 100% forthcoming, but I sort of decided to take a step back from those people, which, you know, you got to do. My mum has been like my number one supporter, and my little brother Ollie as well. And now in the future, my girlfriend. But in regards to coming out and with the medical side of it, I really struggled. I mean, all you want to do, I think, as a young trans person is be yourself and sort of fit in with the people around you. I mean, for me, the biggest thing for me going through high school was to fit in with the lads and sort of go through puberty at the same time, if that makes sense. And that was something that was really hard to sort of navigate with sort of the NHS and things like that. But I ended up going through a private practice and went through that route. So I actually started hormone blockers at 12 and then testosterone at 13. So my puberty was pretty much the same as, you know, any other lad in the school, you know? So I feel really lucky to be able to have that opportunity. And I feel like it should be a wider opportunity, especially through sort of the NHS and things like that. But that's my sort of relationship with the medical care and sort of my friends and family who are amazing.
I'm so glad that you were able to access private care, and I can only sort of begin to sort of understand what that must have been like for you, knowing that, okay, so it's starting at 12, which means that, yeah, you're going to go through puberty in a way that you should be, rather than having to experience it the other way and then having to manage all of those complexities in your later teens, or maybe even early 20s.
In the least dramatic way, it saved my life to be able to access medication at that age. It saved my life. I mean, anyone that knew me and people that might have had an onlook of my life, like with my mom and things like that, I was in and out of hospital because I just didn't want to be here anymore. I had a really tough sort of time from the age of 9, and then I came out at 12. And even though when I came out, it was this big weight that had lifted, I still felt different and I still felt wrong. So then the medication, basically, it helped what was going on in my head match with what was going on with my body, which was really, it saved my life. I mean, it's incredible. And it really sort of, when I look back at it, it makes me quite emotional because I'm like, oh, little old me, if I could have known when I was a kid that it was a possibility, it would have saved a lot of hassle.
I'm sorry to hear that you had such a difficult time with your mental health. It does make a lot of sense, though, and I think it's something that a lot of trans and queer and LGBTQI plus people in general experience. And I'm wondering for you, was part of that a lack of sort of conversation, maybe in school environments, or a lack of access to, or even knowing how to access information to know that what being trans means and what it means for you and sort of your growing up?
I think it was with schools, I think it was really hard because not many people understood and not many people got it. But I think I was in a really lucky position that the people that I gravitated to, as in like teachers and pastoral members and things like that, they were willing to understand and willing to educate. And I think that that's, you know, the number one thing that I sort of seek out in people. If they want to learn and they want to sort of go, ah, oh, sorry, I messed up there, but how about we do this instead? That is my number one biggest fan for that. But it was hard for some people to understand. But eventually I think people got to it. I think the pressure for me growing up was that I had to try and make people understand. I had to make people like me, make people feel like I wasn't different or strange. But I ended up realizing that actually that's on them and not me. And I can seek out people that want to learn and want to be around me as Leo and not as somebody else, you know? And I think that was really positive in my sort of upbringing. And my mum especially was my number one supporter, as I've said before. And she would guide me through all the different things. I mean, there's only been a few occasions where she's gone, they're not for you, Leo. And I've gone, right, okay, that's fine. You know? And I think that was really a big help as well.
Was your mum the first person you told?
Yeah, I'll tell you how it happened if you want. Yeah, so I was upstairs on my phone, as any other 12-year-old would be, and I was scrolling on TikTok, so it was like a new thing, and it was just after lockdown had hit. So it was my 12th birthday on the 19th of March, and a few days after lockdown hit. I think it was a week into lockdown. I was scrolling my phone, and I saw this guy who said what it's like to transition from girl to boy. And I was like, oh my days, what is this? And I look in the comments and it was like this thing about being transgender. And so I looked online and I Googled it and I sort of just went, oh my God, I need to tell somebody, this is me. And so I ran downstairs. I said, Mum, I need you, can I talk to you? And she was cooking tea and she just dropped it. And she came into the living room with me and she sat down with me and I said, I want to be like him. And she went, what, like, you want to be like a boy? And I went, yeah. And she went, okay. And I was like, oh my days. And I sort of, in my head, I was like, give me more of a reaction. This is big. And I said, so can I get my hair cut? And she went, of course you can. So that was the next step. But obviously in lockdown, it took about 2 weeks. So I went around with a beanie on my head and tucked all my hair up. And I wore this hat for about 2 weeks. And the wash that I had to give it after that 2 weeks was diabolical, by the way. But I got my hair cut and that was it. And I think I told my family and we all actually sat around the table and put names in a hat for names that I would then go by, because I couldn't make the decision on my own. It was a big decision. And my mum and my little brother, like, everybody put names in and we pulled out Leo, and that was it from that point on.
Wow. I've heard a lot of stories about coming out and a lot of stories about how people chose their names, but you are the first person to ever say it was a literal name out of a hat.
Leo, can I ask, because you have that name, Leo, are you actually a Leo born in July, August?
I am not. I'm a Pisces. But I do resonate with a Leo very much.
I feel like Pisces would have been a more complex choice of name.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I feel like that would have been harder for everybody to learn.
Are you Leo or Leonardo?
Leo. Definitely Leo. I think we had like talks about being Leonardo, but then my mum was like, no, because like you're going to get called Leonardo DiCaprio all the time. And I was like, okay, I need to like, I'll just be Leo then.
And how old were you when that happened?
12, yeah, 12. 12. So when I was 12, so in March I came out, then that was the sort of end of March. In the middle of April, I got my hair cut. And then in between that, I had my name change and I did that. And then after that, I think it was the December when I started medication.
That's just wonderful. Wonderful that you were, you know, like the TikTok, the excitement, the acceptance. The mum, can you make this a bigger deal, please? It's just that such love and support. And that brings me on to my next question, really, sort of within your transition and your journey growing up. You have obviously got into acting. And I wanted to just ask, how did that happen? Is it something you always wanted to do?
When I was a kid, my mum put me in sort of singing, acting, dancing, because I love to sing, I love to prance about, I love to act. I mean, I think my earliest video is, I think my aunt took it of me, and I was doing, this is my angry face, this is my sad face, and I think I was about four. So I always wanted to be an actor, I always wanted to dance and sing and be on stage and do all of that, and my dream was to be on TV. But I always felt wrong in the parts that I was put in, so I found it really difficult to go for auditions and stuff, because I knew that it wasn't right. And my mum was like, no, but this is brilliant for you, this is perfect for you. She's like, you can wear a nice dress. No, thank you. No, thanks. I was like, that was me out of it. And then when I came out, I did a few local stuff. So I did my first thing going back into acting, singing, dancing was a talent show at my high school. And I did singing. And then somebody there actually said, why don't you do, you know, the acting, the, you know, the theatre stuff? And I was like, oh, amazing, I'll do that. So I did Legally Blonde. And that's when I think I got like a nota for that. That was my first like whoa moment as a kid. Yeah. And then that sort of ignited my passion again for it. And then locally at the Blackpool Grand Theatre, I played Bugsy Malone in Bugsy Malone. And that was two summers before I got this job. And then I went to college, and in college I did performing arts acting route and fell in love with it all over again. I think it's, for me, it was always just like, I'd sort of pull away from it. And I'd be like, ah, and then I'd do something and I'd fall in love with it all over again. It was beautiful. And then, yeah, in the summer I got an audition through and was like, oh my God, this is incredible. And got it. Surprisingly.
are you subtly hinting there at Hollyoaks?
Yes, I am.
where you play Ro. And for any listener who doesn't watch Hollyoaks, firstly, you should. But secondly, Ro, I think you, Leo, are the fifth person to play Ro. Is that right?
Yeah, coming up to it. I mean, I launched into my research at Ava Webster, who was incredible, yes, who played Ro before me. She did an incredible job of portraying Ro's coming out story. And then it was me.
Yes, and your dad is played by one of the longest serving Hollyoaks actors. What was it like for you? What was the audition process like for you? What was it like your first day on set? Yeah, just tell us a bit about that.
So I was going through a bit of a rough patch in the summer because I had to go back to college and I didn't want to, basically. And I got a phone call from my next door neighbour who works for an agency. And she rung me and she went, I have found the perfect role for you. And she went, it's not quite perfect because they need someone that's 18 and you're 17 and they need someone that's in the catchment area and you're not in the catchment area, but the role is perfect for you. So she said, I'm going to try and get you in it. Do you want to do it? I went, yes, of course. And she went, do you want to know what it's for? And I went, yeah. And she went, Hollyoaks. mind blown, first off, because how does that happen? Like, getting a phone call and getting sort of that. So she rung Peter Hunt, who is the casting, one of the casting directors at Hollyoaks, and said, look, can he please do this audition? He would be, in her words, good for the role. And I was like, oh, fingers crossed. And so he went, yes, you can do a self-tape. So I did a self-tape and sent it in, which was, by the way, me and my mum reading until like 12 a.m. in the morning, trying to get the lines in my head. And then I sent that in, and Hayley, my agent, Hayley Tamerden, got back to me, and she said, they really like you, they want you to do another one. And I was mind blown again. And you know when something happens and you're like, please pinch me, because this is like too good to be true. It's happened too much. So I did another one, and then they asked me to do an in-person audition. And I went into the room for the in-person audition, and it was in Liverpool, and I was hot, I was sweating, I was like panicking. And I sat in a room with about 10 other trans lads, the same age as me, looked quite similar to me. And I think that was my first sort of sense of big community, which was strange because it was an audition, but we were all sat there chatting and it was really nice. And I got called into the room and I did my first script, and they went, thank you, wait outside, we're going to bring you in for the second one. And then in my second one, I walked into the room and Nick Pickard was in there, and I was reading against him. And I think that sort of experience completely exploded my knowledge of how acting worked. I mean, I sort of went into the room thinking, okay, well, I'm going to do this script in this way, and I'm going to do it like this and like this. But in the moment, he was saying things to me, and he was saying it in a sort of tone, or he was having this certain emotion that then you go with it. And all of a sudden I was in this moment where he was my dad and I was his son, and it was just, it was mental, and everything sort of went away, and it was just me and him in that room. And then that was it. And I sort of stood up, shook everyone's hand, said goodbye. And that was on a Thursday. And then on, didn't hear anything on the Friday, nothing on Saturday, nothing on Sunday. So I thought in my head, I sort of convinced myself that I didn't get it. I was like, oh, not got it, but that's okay. You know, there's always other stuff. Then on the Monday, I was actually babysitting my agent's son. And I went out to the park with him, and we you know, stayed out for a little bit. And I came back to the car, and she went, I'm just going to get Jasper in the car. I'm just going to get my kid in the car. Can you stay outside for me? And at that moment, I was like, oh, my God, no, I've not got it. And she doesn't want me to cry in front of the kid. And I was like, oh. And then she shut the door. She turned around and she went, you've got it. Incredible shot. Honestly, I started crying. I mean, there's a video online actually on her Instagram and mine, I'm pretty sure, of me phoning my mum and telling her that I got the job. And then I think the week after that, because I started sort of a couple weeks after, and the whole 2 weeks before I started on set, I was so nervous. I was like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I'm scared. But everybody's like, no, come on, it'll be good. And then my first day on set is a scene that nobody's actually ever seen. Yes, it was with Alex Fletcher, who played
Diane.
My mum. Yeah, Diane plays my mum. And she and I came up behind her, and it was basically I'd come back from a trip and was saying hello, and it was beautiful. And then it started raining. Then we had to move inside, and then it didn't work. And it was all these things. And then it ended up changing. So the first time that everybody saw me was on the wedding day of Diane Hutchinson and Tony Hutchinson. And I sort of walked in with Brooke and Chloe, and that was the first time I'd met Chloe and met everybody on set. And yeah, it was nerve-wracking, but it was amazing. And it was like a little family.
It sounds like a phenomenal experience, and we're such gifted actors as well. We've been in the soap for so long, and I can't imagine what it must have been like walking into that room for the first time to do your second audition, let alone the build-up to then being in front of all the cameras. And one thing I was thinking about when you were sharing your story about your life is actually it sounds like there's a lot of similarities with you and with Ro, within sort of mental health, just general complexities in understanding what was going on, what is trans? Oh, hang on a minute, that's me, going through the name change. So how has that been for you?
it's been really eye-opening. It's been beautiful to play a character that resonates so deeply with me. I mean, Ro will do something, or I will play Ro doing something, and I'll go, oh, I've done that before. And be like, oh. I mean, in regards to the sort of the mental health struggles that Ro's been through and my struggles, I think it really helped me build a secure knowledge of the character and helped me build sort of how I was going to play Ro, because I've been through so much that Ro's been through, you know? I mean, even recent storylines that have been happening, it's sort of a nod, and I've sort of got things going on that he's had going on and things like that. It's just beautiful.
It absolutely is. And I think genuinely that your acting is extraordinary. And I think that part of that is because it is incredibly believable.
Thank you so much. Oh, stop it.
But you came in strong. Yes, the wedding scene. I was a bit confused. I think probably a few viewers were like, oh, we've got different, how exciting, different actors. What's going on? But it very quickly, I think, for most fans, felt like it had always been. And I'm wondering what reception you've had from fans or just generally.
Incredible. I mean, 99% of the time, everybody is so lovely and so just incredible to interact with. I mean, the audience are amazing. They've sort of taken Ro as he is, which I think is beautiful. And I think Hollyoaks is really good with their audience because our audience is so widely accepted in so many different ways. I mean, obviously you get the 1%, but 99% of the time, amazing. So the reaction has been really good, and I've been really grateful for how everybody sort of interacted with me personally, like, you know, in the street, if they recognize me, or online on social media. I've been really grateful.
I'm so pleased to hear that, because it is a big role to step into, a trans man playing a young trans man who's going through school, who's reconnecting through the journey of his transition. And I just think it's amazing that you went for it, because what I'm also seeing when I see you on telly is you showing young kids that are trans, queer, LGBTQ+, you can do this as well, you know.
Yeah, and they 100% can. Anybody can be whoever they want to be. And I think that even, especially now, we need to give love and hope and everything that can just help people with that, you know, because it's hard. It's a really hard thing to do, to come out and to transition and to do all of that. And it's nice to have that, to be trusted with that character, to be able to show people that they can do it and that it will all be okay in the end.
It absolutely will. And I could talk to you all day, and I wish that I could, but we are running out of time. So before we have to say goodbye, what do your future plans look like? Is it the Oaks?
100%. It's the Oaks. It's everything that comes with it. And hopefully I can portray Ro for a very long time.
I really hope so too. It's been absolutely wonderful speaking with you today, Leo. And if people want to find you online, where do they go?
Well, on Instagram, my handle is Leo P. Cole. Just catch me on there. And thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate talking to you guys.
You are so welcome. Thank you, Leo.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's not what you get if you listen to BCFM on a Friday morning or Friday afternoon or a Monday morning. Sorry, Steph.
I do play the original of that on Monday morning.
Oh, do you?
Mm.
Along with everything else in the 40s.
64, actually.
I loved that. I've heard it before. Still love it.
It's a nice version, actually. It's very different to the Simon and Garfunkel interpretation.
Garfunkel.
So, well, that's the Cyril remix. It's by the group's called Disturbed, and obviously the song's called Sound of Silence. And they did release both versions, so you can get the slow one, and that's the clubby fun one.
Right, yeah. I see, yeah.
So they do have both. It's just, I know Steph likes to bop along, so...
Yeah. Did you like the interview?
I did.
Yes.
Good.
Yes. He's lovely guy, isn't he?
Yeah, nothing to not like, really.
So it's lovely when it's an interview like that as well, where they just talk loads.
Well, this is why I'm also looking forward to putting the video out soon-ish, because then, lovely listeners, you'll be able to see not just how happy Leo was, but how happy I was as well. and it's a very interesting angle, isn't it, Steph, the Zoom camera? So yeah. I'm not going to...
Does it get your best size?
No. it gets my best forehead.
Oh, right.
But it's not about me.
It's not about
it's
you.
Not it's about me. Leo. It's about Leo. So,
a lot of energy, I'll give it wasn't there?
The cause.
So when I meant to sing it, you don't want me so much of you then?
No. I don't hate it that much. No. Keep me in the video, please.
you were just Instagramming and you meant I've got a spot on my forehead.
I did say that. Yeah, to sort my fringe out.
That's why it's radio.
Awesome. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, but we don't have very much on our YouTube channel at the moment.
No, but so, I
because
like
we're a radio show, funnily enough.
Funnily enough. So. But that, yeah, it's. I think it could be nice every now and again to pop a bit of media out there.
Yeah, well, we did in the early days. It's just it's not as everyone in this room will testify to. It's not the easiest thing in the world just pulling off a show every single week on the radio.
No, it's not.
Alone doing editing.
We just make it sound as though it is easy.
I feel like I do really well to get it all done myself, don't you think, Andy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
all the editing that I do, all the behind the scenes.
All the egos are coming out.
Script writing.
I forget, it's the Ez show.
Yeah, so basically, listeners, I construct every show every week all by myself.
No, not having that.
I definitely don't.
Anyway, talking to things that are true going on in the real world.
Mic drop.
Terry, can we get
some
news?
Some truth? We'll give you some truth. This is Shout Out Truth. Welcome along. From the 5th of August, publicly accessible single-sex spaces, including lavatories, changing areas, and support services such as rape crisis centres in England, Scotland and Wales, are required or recommended to operate based on an individual's sex recorded at birth. The move follows updated instructions initially issued by the Equality and Human Rights Commission back in June. Under the new framework, trans individuals are directed to use either unisex amenities or those corresponding to the sex they were assigned at birth, rather than options aligned with their gender identity. The guidance carries no legal enforcement powers, but it applies pressure on companies, public bodies and voluntary groups to limit single-sex provisions to biological sex, which is how they've defined it in the Equality Act of 2010. The revised code has provoked strong objections from campaigners and politicians alike. The Scottish Greens called upon the Westminster government to withdraw the guidance, describing it as authoritarian and cruel. Kate Nevins, the party's equality spokesperson, warned of damaging consequences for trans people who have long used these facilities without problems. The Good Law Project also denounced the measure, describing it as detrimental and likely to create divisions. The directive will marginalise trans individuals and push them away from shared spaces, the organisation said. Speaking to the BBC News Channel, Alexander Palmer Yee, director of the Trans Solidarity Alliance, also voiced alarm at the directive's impact. Trans people will be excluded from the services they rely on and left feeling unwelcome and vulnerable in public settings. Our lives will be more constrained and more fragile, she said. Now, a legal challenge was lodged against the freshly introduced code of practice, with campaigners moving to halt it the very day it became active. The Good Law Project, a non-profit organisation which takes legal action against state overreach, is seeking to overturn the guidance published by the EHRC. The move has received backing from Labour MPs, some of whom are aligned with Andy Burnham, according to reports. The newly implemented code says that a service can only be considered single-sex under the Equality Act if it's accessed on the basis of biological sex, as we reported earlier. Now, in a related move, Brighton's long-standing LGBTQIA+ magazine Scene, as well as the Brighton service of community radio station Gaydio, are both reporting on internal disputes on the political left as TERFs, that's trans-exclusionary radical feminists, attempt to stop the Labour Party conference season from engaging with trans women. Now, a quartet of Labour's most prominent union benefactors, remember the Labour Party was established by the trade unions, has confirmed that they will withdraw from this year's party's women's conference in protest at the decision to bar trans women from the main proceedings. Unison, ASLEV, USDAW and the Musicians' Union have all ruled out sending any official delegations to the gathering in Liverpool this September. Each organisation has cited a fundamental clash between the party's new stance and their own established commitment to trans equality. The row centres on a ruling by Labour's National Executive Committee that trans women should be excluded from the formal elements of the event, such as a dress from the floor, policy discussion and ballots. They will, however, remain free to participate in fringe activities which are open to all delegates. Labour's decision follows legal counsel sought in the wake of the Supreme Court judgment. Until that point, Labour's Women's Conference had happily permitted any member identifying as a woman to take part in official business, including those who are trans. The development will be awkward for the party leadership, given the scale of financial backing that the trade union movement provide them. Unison, which has over 1.3 million people as members and has contributed tens of millions to Labour's coffers over the last 25 years, stated that its absence derives from a direct contradiction between the party's access rules and the union's own equality policy. USDAW, which represents more than 360,000 workers across the retail, distribution and manufacturing sectors, has taken a similar position. A spokesperson confirmed the union would not be present, adding, "This is because the party has excluded trans women, and this runs counter to USDAW's policy on trans equality." ASLEF, which is a train drivers union, and the musicians union, have also declared that they will steer clear of the event, with the latter citing a long-standing position of trans inclusion. Labour for Trans Rights, a campaign group within the Labour Party, voiced its frustration at the party's approach. It noted that trans women members have long found a place within the Labour Party and described the exclusion as blatant. And finally, Grampian Hospital Radio, our colleagues who broadcast from studios in Inverness to NHS facilities across the Highlands of Scotland, might just have held the most northerly Pride event on the British mainland. On June the 18th, the two-hour Pride special was transmitted from the station with Craig Duthie. It brought together a mix of uplifting music, Pride anthems and feel-good favourites whilst recognising the importance of love, diversity, inclusion and being proud of who you are. In a press release, Grampian Hospital Radio said, "Pride is a time to celebrate the LGBTQ community, reflect on progress towards equality and support a society where everyone can feel accepted and valued." Craig Duthie said, "The feel-good factor is all about positivity and bringing together through music. My special Pride party is a chance to celebrate diversity, friendship and the freedom to be yourself whilst enjoying fantastic tunes." That's the news summary for this week, but there's plenty more comment and content on our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt. Why not take a look? For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That was wonderful.
That was fantastic, it was, wasn't it? Those were the days when they used
Belinda Carlisle and Heaven is a Place
Belinda
on Earth.
Belinda Carlisle,
big
yes.
hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the time of big hair, wasn't it?
Yeah, big hair.
Big hair.
My mum's still got that
big
hair.
Shoulder pads.
Yeah.
Never changed from then?
No, she's, yeah.
Well, she's got a shell suit too.
She does still own her shell suits.
Excellent.
You love my mum threw theirs out a few weeks ago. I thought, you still have them? Well, they were a fire hazard, you know.
They
back
are.
Then, people smoked a lot more.
Yeah.
You just walk down the street and you just go...
was it Dallas that brought out, that started the trend of wide shoulders?
The Golden Girls wore them.
Did they?
Yeah, I think Dallas was just before
generally,
that, though,
it was just
it?
Generally a fashion sort of movement in the early 80s,
yeah.
wasn't it?
Yeah, Dallas.
Big shoulder
Dynasty.
Yeah. I wore them. I loved them. I still really like them. Yeah. Not in a set, just the top jacket bit, really.
Well, what do you mean, and not in a set?
Not what's the top set? And bottoms. Oh, at
I
the
see
same
what you
time.
Mean. I thought you meant
well, otherwise
a,
it's too
a set of shoulder pads. I thought, well, you got one monkey arm or something.
No, but otherwise, like you make the noise too much, don't you?
Personally, I don't know.
That's what it does.
What, shoulder pads?
What, have you wear shoulder pads?
No, no. The shell suit, not the
oh,
shell suit.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yes,
you clarify
sound.
We moved on to the yes.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, and if you ran, it got even louder, didn't it? Sure.
Never owned one.
There was that lady that was on commercial television in the morning doing exercises.
The green
shell suit. There was a green goddess on the BBC.
Okay.
And Mad Lizzie, was it? Mad Lizzie.
And do you remember Mr. Motivator?
Mr. Motivator.
Oh, I loved him. My brother
idea.
Met him
in his leotard
in London. And they had a nice chat.
Oh. Well, Mr. Motivator.
Yeah.
He comes across as a nice bloke, actually. He's still about it, isn't he? He still does stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh, this is the age of things like Timmy Mallett as well, isn't it?
Timmy Mallett, pops up at conventions for
Still has Timmy Mallett.
Yeah.
So Mallett. The world is so bad, we have to remember the past at the moment.
That's how
But you know, it's been awful before, and to be cheesy, I do have some hope.
Oh,
well,
you have to have hope.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter
I
how
do.
Bad things get. If you don't have hope, you don't
hope
fight
project.
It. And, you know, but I'm talking in general. You know.
Well, I was raring to go yesterday to have a pee in public.
On the pavement?
I had to wait until after midnight. I was raring to go for the fifth.
So, I mean, as we reported, these new guidelines are just that.
Guidelines.
They're not legally enforcing at all.
No.
And no one was.
Yeah.
Never been illegal for me to use a female toilet or vice versa.
No.
Are they going
no
to send us out guidance on how to be trans now?
Yeah.
Did you see that? What's the woman's name? The one that can never answer questions to
anyone.
What was that?
Or J.K. Rowling.
No,
the new EHRC person.
No, the previous one, wasn't it? It was
Baroness Falconer.
She's evil. Evil.
She said that it shouldn't have been released like it was. It should have been legally enforced that trans people should have consequences of going in the toilets.
We might as well get
inverted commas they shouldn't be in.
Should be branded.
You know, I don't understand.
For somebody that ugly.
All right. Let's not make it come on. But
we don't need to stoop
to their level.
No, in all seriousness, though, I'm smiling now, but I don't understand that this has become, genuinely, I do not understand, I don't think I ever will, how this has become such a hyperfixation. In such a powerfully negative way.
But it's only for a minority of people.
Yes, by a minority of wealthy people.
I was going to say, this is the big problem behind it, isn't it? It's fueled by money.
Yeah.
And we
do live in a society where if you are, the richer you are, the more
And
you
they're
can get
headquartered
your way.
In Tufton Street, aren't they, in London?
With all the rest, yeah. With all the rest of them.
With a lot of other right-wing causes, that's right. Mm. That's very true.
Yeah.
And, as I just say, the thing is, these moral panics come and they do go. So I think Ez is right. During the late 1980s, there was the moral panic about lesbians and gay men and, you know, teaching your children, and Section 28 came in and all this kind of stuff.
But the problem is the mental health challenge is now coming down
that's
the road
true.
Where
that's
you're
true.
Young trans people who are kind of thinking, well, what's the point?
We had exactly the same thing back when it happened with gay and lesbian people. It's just, we didn't know as much about mental health back then, you know.
But the good thing is that by the early 1990s, that kind of moral panic is beginning to lose its momentum and is not selling the newspapers, because that's a crucial thing. It's about the people forcing, it's clicks nowadays. In those days, it was copies of the Daily Mail and copies of the Sun and copies of the Express going. But they will find eventually people are going to be saying, I'm sick and tired of reading about this.
They are already.
And they will stop buying the papers, and that hopefully will take the boil off of the...
The positive note was that I think what's going to happen is most of it's going to end up gender neutral. Because business does not have time to waste dealing with political
issues.
Also a lot of conversations that employees just don't want to have. with customers. It is excruciating, the idea of, I think, some staff members who have nothing but love for the
Could you imagine the training the queer they have community
to have to go up to somebody and question. Can you imagine in a coffee
shop? And even then, you need to bear in mind,
but it would be awful.
It's not illegal to lie.
No.
I'm just an ugly woman.
All the time I've known Steph Antar, you've always been female as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. And if I turn around and said, are you female? I'd expect you to say yes.
Yes.
What are they going to do when you do?
Mm, indeed.
That's very true. And another
slap.
A related incident is that already cases have happened where lesbians that are presenting as quite masculine.
And heterosexual women too.
And women of colour.
Yep.
Who don't fit the sort of JK Rowling image.
Every time the government release guidelines for anything, and this time this guidance includes people, women who are pregnant and disabled people, the stress test gave those two sections a positive report. But the section on trans people, this is the government's own stress test against the guidelines, said that they're ill thought of and they should not have been released in the way they have, because we now have examples, and this was in the stress test, that they have people of colour being tackled and butch lesbians being tackled because they look a little bit masculine.
Whatever society perceives, this is the thing.
Well, it's rich and turf class.
But it's to do with societal perception of sex or gender.
Yep.
So culturally, it's to do with where you are. It's location centric. So what is determined as feminine here is not what would be determined necessarily feminine somewhere else.
Yeah. Celebrate different types of bodies.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, I don't look typically feminine, but I also don't look typically stereotypically masculine. So nobody's going
to
say anything.
You don't normally sit still long enough for anyone to see anything.
Nobody's going to say anything to me. I'm not the target audience. But so many, you know, wonderful people are. Mm. So I do want to say something that if you have trans, queer, non-binary friends, I think at the moment, and I'm sure, you know, you're already being really supportive, but they're going to be feeling quite vulnerable. So just be there for them even more.
And a big hats off to Not In Our Name as well.
Absolutely.
They're incredible. We've had them on the show.
Yeah.
But they're really, really pushing.
And the Good Law Project, who we've also had on the show. We're actually taking them to court, the government to court, which is good. Yeah. Labour MPs are backing it.
Yeah. What about the positive?
It's weird that we had it. All the politicians, voted about, not releasing it and the like, and it just got completely ignored.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how many businesses in Bristol are just so, you know, adopting of everything, you know. Yeah. It's like you go to the watershed,
we're not having you treat our customers like that. They did that way before this all started.
Like 10 years ago they had gender neutral.
But I can understand why, for a small business, it's a lot of money.
Yeah,
you know, all for something that's been made up by a load of people and never actually come to.
It's like it's something new, isn't it, instead of decades and decades of trans people using the toilets of choice.
Very true.
Anyway, that's it for this week. If you have an event or a story, or perhaps you'd even like to get involved in the radio with us, do get in touch. Check us out online.
Plus, all our shows are available as podcasts on all good services, as well as our website, shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Next week, I think, Sangeeta.
Sangeeta.
Yes.
Wonderful.
So join us for that. From myself, from Terry, from Tara, from Steph, and the lovely... Say goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye now.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.